right, Falcoholics near and far, a happy new year to you as we are about to celebrate or are celebrating the new year, depending on when this gets uploaded. Welcome to the Falcoholics post-game podcast. I'm your host, Corey Woodruff. And, you know, new year's new beginnings. We are saying goodbye to a Falcons season. 2018 is in the books, putting this one on the shelf and heading elsewhere. And we are, you know, preparing to get to a point where we can look ahead and try to be optimistic for the future. And if you know me and you know this podcast, you know that's the brand here. We really do try to be optimistic and try to look for that silver lining wherever we can find it. And, you know, that's just one of the difficult things about a bad season is that you can kind of get a bit dismayed in the discord. But, you know, chin up, my friends. Let's try to look ahead to the future. And we've got plenty to talk about in that regard. And I am joined, of course, by none other than Evan Birchfield of the Falcoholic. Evan, thank you so much for joining us. And how are you doing as we transition into 2019?
Thanks for having me on again, Corey. I'm doing great. Hope everyone has a happy new year and starts off the year right. And yeah, let's talk about this Falcons and Bucks finale.
Yes, a game that they were once down 17-0 and won, which is a very non-Falcon thing to happen. Usually we don't have big comebacks against teams like this, but usually it happens the other way around. We're up by a lot and we end up, you know, throwing the lead in the trash can. But I think that there is a lot that you can look at this game and be optimistic about to see them be able to, I think, after a really tough season, finish it on a strong note. And it did drop them a lot in the draft rankings, so they might miss out on a few guys because they were able to win this game from where they originally were. But sometimes it's hard to control that, and you have to take it how it comes. So, Evan, what were a couple of things you saw on Sunday that made you feel optimistic for the future?
I think, like what you said about the comeback, it's not something we're used to. We're usually on the other end of it and blowing the lead, obviously. But, I mean, you pretty much saw Matt Ryan have, you know, he had a pretty good game. He had his first ever, I think I read somewhere that it was the first ever quarterback reception for a touchdown or whatever for the Falcons or in Falcons history or whatever. So that was pretty cool to see. Julio was, you know, back to his normal self. Like he's been doing all year. So that's pretty exciting. And then he, you know, finished off the year as the, with the most reception yards, this season out of the whole NFL. So, I mean, the offense is cranking and, you know, defense is whatever, but it was against the Bucks and it was the final game and it's, you know, it's hard to really put a lot of stock into anything, but it was a good win. And I loved how it ended with, Matt Bryant kicking to win the game against a team that he spent, you know, a decent portion of his career with. Yeah, it was a good ending to the season, even though there's no playoffs or anything. It was a great send-off, I think, into 2019.
Yeah, I think those are really good points. You bring up Matt Bryant, and I do want to talk about him just for a second. He's still on contract with the team next year. He was very, very reliable all season. He only missed one field goal that was, I believe, from like 57 out. It didn't go in, or no, I think he made that one, but there was another long field goal where he just didn't have the distance on it because of his kind of his ailment with his leg. He just couldn't really get that power on there. But, you know, it brings up an interesting conversation because he is, you know, entering the point in his career where you really begin to wonder, even for a kicker, you know, when is he going to call it quits? And it's one of those things where, like, he'll be 44 when the new season starts. He turns 44 on May 29th. So you have to kind of, I think, take into consideration the fact that Bryant could decide to retire. I think he may want to come back for another year. I think he may look at this team and go, well, yeah, we didn't get to where we wanted to go, but we've got a good chance of getting back next year if they make the right moves. And but then again, it's like also – there's no guarantee for him. Like, there is obviously no guarantee that if he comes back, that they'll just be able to magically go to the Super Bowl or something. Like, they had their chance at that and they weren't able to do it, but he has gotten to play in a Super Bowl, which in and of itself is a big deal. I know we don't always think about that, but, you know, he got to win the NFC Championship and has been able to be a part of a Super Bowl contending team. He's made a lot of big kicks in his career, had a really great kind of closing moment ending his season that had some struggles with his, I believe was with his hamstring, was able to get that last kick and, you know, end the season on a good note. But do you think he could hang it up? Because I'm kind of wondering right now if that might be more possible than we're considering, because he has an out every year in this contract to be able to do that. So do you think that's a distinct possibility?
I mean, the only way I think that we obviously don't know the full amount of details on his injury. I mean, he was well enough to kick the last few games, so you assume he's fine or close to it. I think as long as he wants to play, he's going to play. You know, like you mentioned, he only missed one field goal this year. He had 20 attempts or 21 attempts and he made 20 of them. Like, it's not like he's lost a step. He had his best field goal percentage this year with 90. He made 95.2%, and that's kicks over 20, you know, counting kicks over 20 attempts. He's doing, you know, usually with kickers, you get rid of them, obviously, if they start to suck, if you want to put it bluntly. Like, yeah. He's not. He's actually, it's like he's, you know, he missed some games, so it's hard to say he's getting better. But he definitely didn't get worse. As long as health is there and he wants to play, I don't see any reason why the Falcons shouldn't keep him. You know, the whole Tavecchio thing, it's interesting that they kept him on the roster for the last several games once Matt Bryant returned. You know, that's, you know, and then on top of that, we have a new, we'll get a new special teams coach. I don't know how much that plays into the kicking game. Probably not a lot because Matt Bryant just keeps kicking. But to sum it up, I think he'll be back. I think they would have put – because this is what I'm not saying he should retire at all. But leading up to this game, like I was saying, he spent a good portion of his career with the Buccaneers a couple of years. And that's really where you went, okay, you know, he spent – people don't realize he spent some seasons with the Giants. I think he was with the Dolphins before. I think there was one or two other teams. But he spent a couple seasons with the Buccaneers, and that's where people really knew who he was. And then, obviously, he's been a legend in Atlanta. I think it would have been a perfect ending to go into Tampa. Like, let's pretend that was it. Wouldn't you have felt, wow, Matt Bryant, you know, he went out how he came in, just a legend, you know, won them a game in Tampa. You know, that's what you would want. But the fact that nothing was said of that game before, like, oh, this might be Matt Bryant's last game. There's been no whispers of it. If you follow his wife, Melissa Bryant on Twitter, she's anytime somebody's really said anything about him retiring or whatever, she's kind of put her sense in saying, you know, like Matt Bryant hasn't said anything about retiring. So I don't think it's going to happen, because when you have a, you know, you could say Morton Anderson or something, but in my eyes, Matt Bryant's, you know, top five kicker in NFL history, just based on clutch, but he's definitely without a doubt the best kicker in Falcons history in my eyes. And there would have been more to it than waking up, you know, during a weekday, going to work and being like, oh, did you hear Matt Bryant retired? Like, he's not going to do that. They would give him a going out party, if that makes sense. I think he's at that level where he's going to get that treatment, you know. And they might even say it during the regular season, like, I don't know, week 3 or 4 or something, and he's starting to slow down and he's like, you know, I think this is my last season, because they're going to give him that legend treatment, and he deserves it. I don't think it's going to be, oh, Matt Bryant's retiring, and that's it. You know, breaking news, you read it on Twitter, Matt Bryant's retiring. I don't think he's going to go out like that.
Yeah, I think that there's a case that can be absolutely made that he deserves more. But, you know, one thing I've learned about the Falcons and a lot of NFL teams is that they really don't tend to get sentimental. And, you know, if you look at Matt Bryant's contract, and the way that it's set up is that he can get out of it whenever he wants to. I mean, there's really no, like, the team has an out every year. He has an out every year. There's really no hard penalty. I mean, you kind of look at there's a little bit of dead money if they decided to cut him, but at the same time, his cap next year is $4 million. And my guess right now is that they cut this deal to kind of get him back in the building for the season that they all kind of thought was going to go much differently. And my big question is, you know, considering the fact that he did have the health issues this year, and again, it held him out for a few games. You know, it wasn't a lost season, so we don't really think about it as much. But think about if it really was the kind of year we all thought it was going to be, and the team was not able to find a replacement, and it cost them one or two really close games and hurt their playoff standing. If you're the team, you might think, ooh, you know, we love Matt Bryant. He's been here for 10 years. He's a wonderful kicker, or 10 seasons at least. I mean, he's a wonderful kicker. But at the same time, we really are kind of curious where his health is going, because he did struggle with some health this year. And, you know, it's not like most kickers really cannot kick 57 field goals, you know, 57-yard field goals every game. But at the same time, it's like you have the situation where you wonder exactly if the money is going to be there for him next year. Cause you know, I mean, there's a $1 million cap hit. So, I mean, they would only save about $3 million if they cut him, but you know, if he decides to retire, that money would go, you know, obviously the team would recoup it, but I'm very curious to see what could happen. I think the fact that Giorgio Tavecchio played so well in his absence makes it a more difficult position. I think if they didn't have anybody, obviously you bring him back and he's back, but we don't know if he's going to retire. We don't know if the team's going to want to give Tavecchio the permanent job. I mean, they have very similar career trajectories, because Bryant bounced around between the NFL and other leagues for a while before he found that kind of home in Tampa Bay. And then he came to Atlanta and obviously made the bulk of his career and made him who he really is. So sometimes kickers take time to get developed, and maybe that's where Tavecchio is. You know, he kind of had to bounce around the league to really find his footing, no pun intended. And then he could come to Atlanta and really be the heir apparent to Bryant, because obviously they can't carry two kickers on the roster in a season where they're going to want to have everyone they can have to really make that push again. So I'm very curious where this will go. Not to give you too much kicker talk, but I think that's a big thing in this game, as you wonder exactly what's going to happen with Bryant, because I think that's just like one of the grand mysteries of the offseason. You know, from a lesser extent, Tevin Coleman may have played his last game as a Falcon yesterday. He's had a really nice end to the year. You can probably tell he really is very focused on this idea of, I'm about to be a free agent. Teams are going to want to see that I can go out there and be a lead running back, because he wants to get paid like a lead running back. And I think he will. And I think that's going to be his last game here. I will say, you know, if I had to give an early prediction, I think Tevin Coleman will leave Atlanta and will pursue the like some have floated around the Jerick McKinnon type contract that San Francisco gave McKinnon after he left Minnesota. They're very similar situations. Coleman's a dangerous player when he is used correctly. He has value as a runner and as a receiver, and NFL teams really do value that. So I don't imagine he's going to be back. And then Justin Hardy may have played his last game as a Falcon. He's obviously a guy who has never really etched in that third receiver role in Atlanta like he probably hoped he would. In 2016, that was going to be his time to do that. But then the emergence of Taylor Gabriel kind of put that away for a while. I think that Hardy will also leave Atlanta. I think he's going to want to try to find a team that will give him more to do. I think he's a valuable rotational guy. I think he can really be a factor, particularly on third down. I think he can be a guy, you know, that can be a good special teams player and be that receiver you just kind of, because he's got a little bit of a clutch factor, I think, to him that Atlanta never really utilized properly. I think he's a better player than Atlanta showed. But then again, you look at Atlanta's receiving chart, and it's Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Mohamed Sanu. I mean, there's just not really any room for him here to be more than what he was. And, you know, the team, obviously, I think, is going to look more to Russell Gage in the future. Marvin Hall, they'll have to make a decision on him, but I imagine he'll be back. I think Hardy will end up leaving after the season. And then another big name is Vic Beasley. You know, that guaranteed contract would go in at the beginning of the league year, and they're going to have to make a decision whether they're going to release him or not, or try to redo a deal with him that kind of lessens that cap hit. Because if you're paying a guy $12 million, he's a top-tier pass rusher, and Vic Beasley has really kind of faded into more of a rotational guy as the years have gone on. So there are some big names that may be playing their last game. Now, Grady Jarrett may be a free agent, but at the same time, I imagine that deal will get done before the league year starts. They really, I cannot imagine that they would let Grady hit free agency. I think that's a deal that will get done very soon. And then you guys, guys like Bruce Irvin will be a free agent. I imagine he'll be back. You'll also have someone like Logan Paulson, who, you know, I don't think will be back, but I think he's been a good player for the team, and I would be happy to see him return. And then you've got guys like Ryan Schrader and Robert Alford and Brian Poole, who kind of have people wonder whether Poole's going to get the tender extended to him, or he'll become a free agent, or maybe they might release Schrader or release Alford. You know, there's just a lot that can happen, I think, with the roster. But I think, you know, the only one I feel really confident in saying is I don't think Tevin Coleman's going to come back.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the main reason why, too, is these last couple of weeks, Brian Hill has really stood out. I wish they would have given him more carries than they did. He only had 20 attempts, but he had 150 yards off of them in two games. And, you know, he finished the season. Obviously, he had less attempts, but he finished the season with 7.9 per carry. I mean, that's a pretty good number, even with it only being 20 attempts or whatever. So, you know, I imagine there'll be Freeman, Ito Smith as the backup, and then he'll still probably get on the field just to give Freeman a breather. And then, you know, if Brian Hill's your third running back based on his play towards the end of the season, I think the Falcons are sitting pretty good. It just, at that point, it makes really no financial sense to bring Coleman back. I mean, I like him, and, you know, I hope he does well. I think he'll probably end up on a team like, I don't know, maybe the Jets or the Colts or something, one of these teams that could use his talents. But yeah, I'm pretty sure we've seen the last. I would be shocked. I would say it's probably like a 90% chance that Coleman's gone. I just don't see it happening. It would really shock me compared to all the other free agents.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to look at it is, there's no need. And it's not that I'm sure they'd like to keep him if they could find the right price, but I imagine what will happen will be similar with what happened with Adrian Claiborne. I think the Falcons will say, hey, we've appreciated your time here. We think you're a great Falcon. Here's an offer that we have. And I think his camp would say, no, that's not enough. We're going to see around the league what else we can find. And I imagine another team will step up and make that deal. So I think he's been a great Falcon. He's been really fun to watch, especially in that Shanahan year, just such an electric unit. But I feel like now he's will be better destined elsewhere.
He could end up in San Francisco, too. Very well, I mean, McKinnon's got – I know they gave McKinnon a contract, but, you know, familiarity with Kyle Shanahan and then McKinnon's little injury there. You know, I think he'll go somewhere and definitely be good. I think – the Falcons will miss him less than they missed, than, like you were mentioning, Claiborne, I think, left a bigger hole than the Falcons expected. Where Coleman leaving, I think the Falcons will be fine. I don't see that as a big issue getting Freeman back, as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to see it. Like, he will be, have a good career elsewhere if he is used properly. I think that if you want him to be a guy that just runs between the tackles every single game, you're not using him properly. You know, getting him out in space, getting him involved in the passing game. Like, he has certain things about him that are really, really, really good, but he also has limitations. And I think if you don't try to coach him around those limitations, you're not going to get the best player out of him. But we'll see where he goes. Obviously, the team has some decisions to make with some other guys, and we may have seen some final games in Falcon uniforms, but I think we'll have some returns. Like, I think, like, Bruce Irvin, I think he'll be back. I think that they'll end
up... He needs to be back, yeah.
He does. He really played well down the stretch and has one of the more prolific sack guys in the league.
And you're probably going to get him cheap. Yeah. We talked about this last week where... He's been productive, even with his age. He's been productive. You could argue he's been maybe the silent dark horse MVP on the defensive line, just because, you know, I'm a big Jack Crawford fan, so he's already won it in my eyes, obviously. But Bruce Irvin, you know, he didn't really need a learning curve when he stepped in, because he hasn't been with the Falcons all season. The Raiders cut him, and then he ended up with the Falcons, and he took. I can't remember who it was he passed on. I think it was the Patriots, and I don't know. I want to say like the Eagles, but that's probably wrong. But he went to Atlanta because he took the hometown discount pretty much. He wanted to go home, and he finally is, and he's used to Dan Quinn. I don't imagine he's going to want, you know, buku bucks to remain a Falcon. I think they'd get a pretty friendly deal with him. So I would be, he would be the free agent where I'd be, I mean, taking Grady Jarrett out of the equation, I would be shocked if Irvin's not back with the team.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely spot for him to land. I mean, he succeeded here. He's back. I don't think he's going to want to have to try to find a whole another team. And I think the team will give him a fair deal. I think there's plenty of money to bring Bruce Irvin back. I don't think he'll get more than $5 million on the open market. And I imagine that Brooks Reed is going to be a cap casualty. That's one early prediction I'm making. I think that they'll try to take some of Reed's money and give it to Irvin to make sure that he's back. So I imagine that's where that's going to go. But we'll have much more later into the season about what they'll do with these offseason moves. But you know, one last thought I'll have about this Tampa Bay game until we get into the coaching things that have been made. I think that it showed that this team still believes in the culture and it still believes in the brotherhood mentality that Quinn has put in place. Because if I'm being very blunt here, this team had nothing to play for. And for them to come out and have such a comeback like this means that they trust their coach. And I think this team has been very open and vocal about their belief in Dan Quinn. And I think that they realize Dan Quinn's belief in them. I think sometimes that gets Quinn in trouble when he puts way too much faith in a guy that doesn't need to be out there. And I think that's something Quinn is going to learn more into his career as a head coach, is that that's not always the best way to do it. But, you know, I believe in Dan Quinn. I always will. I think he's a wonderful head coach. I think he has his limitations, like any head coach does. And I imagine that, you know, there he's made one big move we'll talk about here in a second that I think will help him tremendously and will allow him to give some other responsibilities elsewhere, which I think would be really good. But yeah, I think this win is, it hurts their draft standing. I'm not crazy about that. But at the same time, I think it's a reaffirmation that this team still believes in the mentality. They're not falling apart. There's no problem in the locker room. And again, if you can keep that foundation in place, you can build a Super Bowl run. That's one of the biggest things I think people miss, and what makes a team great is they have the bond. They have that mentality that I love the guy next to me. I'm going to go play for him really hard. That's not just, you know, just coach speak. It's not just an ideal. It's something that fuels all the other things and makes it stronger. And if Atlanta can get that more cerebral aspect and have the health set back in, I think they're going to be okay. And again, you can never really know what's going to happen with health, knock on wood, but I believe in Quinn. I think that this team believes in Quinn, and I think that's why you didn't see him being laid off on Black Monday, is because this organization, I think, knows that he's the guy to lead them. But do you have any other thoughts before we head into the big part of our conversation with all the new coaching changes?
You mean on the Bucks game?
Sure.
Not a whole lot. I just, like I was saying before, I think it was a good way to end the season. And as you were saying, the players, you know, we mentioned it last week, what we wanted to see in the Bucks game was effort, and we definitely saw it, because like you were saying, they were losing and they came back and won, which isn't something we're used to in Atlanta, but it happened, and it was a good way to, you know, it left you feeling optimistic, I think, definitely. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I completely agree. There is plenty, I think, to be happy with going ahead. While the season was quite paltry, while it was a poor year and a very disappointing year. But when you have disappointing years, occasionally teams will want to make transitions at the coaching level. The NFL is sincerely one of the highest turnover jobs in all of really the workforce. I mean, there's just one of those things where people, they just like to rotate people to get new voices and fresh ideas in place to try to spark those special seasons that win Super Bowls and help develop that talent to be able to achieve those things. And the Falcons have made some big moves. They have opted to keep Dan Quinn. That's something that I think a lot of folks expected would happen. It's something I was hoping would happen. And it seems like that is exactly what has happened. But the team has fired Steve Sarkisian, its offensive coordinator, Marquand Manuel, its defensive coordinator, and special teams coach Keith Armstrong. So right now, the team is going to be looking for two new coaches to kind of help run things because Dan Quinn has taken over as the defensive coordinator. And I think this is a big plus for the Falcons because it allows them to take a guy who has been really successful as a defensive coordinator. He called the plays in the most successful stretch of Falcons football I've ever seen came when Dan Quinn was calling the plays, because it was right around the end of that November season, and it carried into 2016, the Super Bowl year. They carried into December and into the playoffs. And during that stretch, he elevated what was really not a very good defense into one of the league's hotter, you know, defenses that was going out there and making a lot of really great plays. And the competition wasn't always fierce, but especially in that playoff run, I mean, you look at what they did to the Seahawks and the Packers, and they just completely shut those offenses down. And it was just incredibly, you know, rewarding to watch a defense that really had not been historically very good in terms of what they were doing in 16 do what they were doing. And I don't think the defense has been as good since. I know that in 17 they actually had a good year, but some folks will tell you those numbers were inflated, that they really weren't that good, that if you look at the DVOA, it was more middle of the league. But I think right now, or I think it may have been like 22nd or something, like it was really like not high at all. But you look at what that happened this year. They lost all of their communication and leadership on defense. It's hard to coach around that, but I've always felt this, and I've said this a lot, that the best person to coach the Falcons defense was going to be Dan Quinn. This is always how it was going to go, that they've needed to get him in place to make the play calls, to make this happen ever since that 16 year. I wish that he had just taken over the plays, but I think he believed in Manuel. I think he was right too. I think Manuel's a good coach, but I think that, you know, he'll get an opportunity elsewhere, and I wish him all the best. But for the Atlanta Falcons, the best person to call the plays was Dan Quinn. And I have long thought that, and I'm very happy to see that they've made that same assumption themselves and are going to put him back in charge of running the plays. And that creates some other, you know, obstacles they'll have to climb in terms of running the game time management and trying to adjust Quinn into doing that full time. But the same idea, I think this is the best thing on the field that the team could do. I think this is where Quinn is best utilized, and there are plenty of coaches who are able to balance calling the plays and running the schematics, and I think that Quinn showed that he can do that. So I think that he's got absolutely everything he needs to succeed there, but I imagine they'll bring somebody else in. DW has a really good piece up now about them bringing in a game situational coach. The Rams have done something similar with Jed Fish and Sean McVay, so we'll see what happens there. But, you know, how do you feel about Quinn taking over the play calling? Does it excite you? Are you more reserved? I mean, where are you kind of thinking on this move?
Yeah, I mean, while you were talking, I was thinking about what I thought. And it was like you were taking the words right from my brain. His best, you know, in 2016, as you were mentioning, when he took over, the Falcons defense was crazy. Like, they were great. Until, obviously, I won't dive into it, but in the Super Bowl in the second half, you know, they had probably three of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, you know, especially at that time, not looking themselves in Russell Wilson, Rodgers, and then Brady. Like, they weren't looking themselves, and it was perfect. So I'm optimistic about getting back to that. I think it was a great move. I don't see any reason why he would have needed to bring somebody else in. It's his defense. It's his guys. You know, this is what he came to Atlanta for, to give us a defense. So, you know, I'm optimistic about it, but I can't really add much more than I think you said exactly what I was thinking. So.
Yeah, that's about, you know, I think the best way to go forward with it is letting Quinn do this. And I'm very excited about the potential of what this has. I think that he's going to, I hopefully take a more close look and looking at coaching up the defensive line himself. And I imagine he's going to get much more hands-on with his team, because I think he realizes that that's what it's going to take for him to be able to keep his job past 19. Like, while I think he is a really good coach, the Falcons are going to probably hit that coaching reset button after next year if things continue not to go well in terms of the coaching. So we'll see what happens, but I think this is the move he needed to make to kind of cement his place here for the next few years. And I very much hope that he finds that success there. Also, the big thing everyone's talking about, where we probably need to really put some good focus, is the offensive coordinator move. Steve Sarkisian has been let go. He was here for 2 years, struggled a lot in 17, really was kind of a tumultuous year for him getting acclimated. It showed a lot more promise in 2018. I think a lot of us probably felt like he was safe to stay here after that Washington game, but not since then have they really looked well on offense until that last, you know, three games of the year. But I think that he lost his job in those five games when they went against a lot of these really good defenses and the offense kind of shut down. And if I had to lay out my idea for why I think this was the right move, I wouldn't have said this in November, but I feel confident saying this now, is that Sarkisian really struggled against good defenses. And I think the offense just went from like a Jekyll and Hyde almost when they had all this talent, but they really struggled. Like, you look at that stretch where it was Cleveland, Dallas, New Orleans, Baltimore, Green Bay, and they didn't look like they were able to move the ball barely. And I know that they had struggles on the offensive line, but there's a point where they also had a lot of other talented people that were able to make good moves, and they didn't use them properly, and the coaching just was not there. And you can't afford, I think, to win a Super Bowl or to contend for a Super Bowl if every time you play a good defense, you can't do anything. Like, if you're just hoping every week that you don't have to play talent that's better than you, sometimes you just have to have, you know, the coaching that's there to meet the challenge of the day. And I think that that was Sarkisian's big problem, is that he struggled against a lot of these either top flight defensive minds or these just incredible rosters. Like, remember that Pittsburgh game where they just blitzed them every play and it just looked like they couldn't do anything to contain it. And they had Devonta Freeman that game too. And I think Sark struggled to use Freeman and Coleman. There was a very interesting statistic that kind of showed that he really didn't know how to well use both those guys. And maybe that was more of like just kind of a statistical, you know, coincidence. But I think, you know, what is good enough for the Falcons is not going to be good enough for somebody else. So I think if this were like the Bills and Sarkisian was having this kind of a season, you're more forgiving because there's just not a lot of talent. You have a rookie quarterback. You know, there's really not a whole lot you can do. But the Falcons have way too much talent to settle for just being a decent offense that can be really explosive against bad teams. Because a lot of those games where they were putting up 30-plus points came against really bad defenses. And again, that Saints game and the Mercedes, you know, Benz Stadium earlier in the year was the only time, I think, that they played a really good defense in New Orleans and put up a lot of points. And they did the same thing to Washington, but Washington kind of faded down the stretch. It's kind of confusing, you know. He was just – and I think that's the story of the game. He was very inconsistent. And when you're that inconsistent – with such a good offense, no matter what the injuries are, there's, to me, not a lot you can do to justify continuing to have the keys to that car, I think. And I think that, you know, I wish him the best. I really do. Sarkisian is, I think, a very talented coach, and I think he'll be very well going back, maybe, I think, to college. And, you know, Tennessee's got a job opening for offensive coordinator. I imagine that's where he may land, but I don't know. I'm very curious to see where he'll go, and I wish him all the best. But at the same time, I think that this is the right move to the Falcons right now to part ways.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, it was inconsistent because, you know, they finished 27th in total rushing yards, but then they finished 4th in total passing yards. You know, there's no, you know, average there. It's just kind of like you're heavy passing, but you're struggling with the run. And, you know, it's pretty much been like that for two seasons. You know, it's weird. You know, I hate to see Matt Ryan have to get another offensive coordinator. Seems like it's like something happens every 2 years. He's getting a new offensive coordinator. But one thing I want to say too is, if you're kind of on the fence about it, you know, obviously they talked to Matt Ryan. You got to hope. I'm pretty much assuming they did, because I don't think you get rid of his offensive coordinator without actually getting his opinion. And I'm sure he's used to it by now, where whoever, you know, there's been reports of Daryl Bevel or maybe Kubiak or maybe even Dirk Cutter coming back. And that's somebody who Matt Ryan's familiar with, but they obviously talked to him and maybe he was on the fence about it. I don't know what they said, but I'm optimistic about what they bring in. But, you know, he was, it's hard to judge if he was actually that good, like if he was good, if he was just average or what, because like you were saying, it's like, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor. It'd be like putting me behind the wheel of a NASCAR race car or something. It's like, yeah, I can go really fast because that's what the car does. But does that make me an actual good race car driver, you know? It's like, get us on go-karts, and that's one thing. But you put me in a NASCAR vehicle, and obviously I'm going to go fast. So it's kind of hard to judge. If he had this production with, like you said, the Bills or something, obviously that means he's good. But anybody who's got Matt Ryan, who had another season, basically another MVP season, but because of like people like Patrick Mahomes and obviously the Falcons record, he's not going to get that much credit for it. But he had another MVP type season. Julio led the league in receiving yards. Yeah, the running back game was not good at all, but the offense worked. It still finished in the top 10 in overall yardage. But, you know, I wish him the best. A lot of fans were sitting there beating the drums for Fire Sark. I was just kind of like, whatever. You know, it doesn't really matter what I think. He's probably gone, and sure enough, he is gone. And hopefully they bring in somebody, because I think if, you know, there's another failure – I guess you fired the offense coordinator, so it's going to be a failure. But if there's another failure at offensive coordinator, it's going to be hard to see Dan Quinn stick around. And I think Dan Quinn, like, I'm very anti-fire Dan Quinn. We've been spoiled with the success we've had, even with this season, but it was pretty much injuries. But, you know, I wish the best for him, and he'll probably go to college, like you said, and hopefully, you know, maybe he'll find his way back in the NFL. But, I think this was a good learning experience for him personally, and wish him the best. And, you know, we'll see what happens, because it sounds like Atlanta's starting interviews, at least with Bevel, next week. So I guess within, you know, sometime within the first 2 weeks of January, we might have our offensive coordinator. We have our defensive coordinator, as you said, with Dan Quinn now. I have no idea what special teams is going to look like, if you want to talk about that, because Armstrong's been with us since I can remember, so it'll be interesting to see what, you know, is brought in there.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's very interesting, because I think when you look at Armstrong, I think he was here for 10, 11 seasons. It's a very long time to have one job in the NFL, and I think it's like what happened with Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. It's just like guys are just in a position for so long, you get kind of stale. And sometimes it's just good for a career to just find a new opportunity and go somewhere new and kind of work with new guys and be able to take some of the things that you really are good at and put them to new use. And I imagine that's what he'll do. He'll find a job. He's going to be a coordinator somewhere else in the league on special teams in no short order. But I think right now for him, it's just going to be a matter of finding that right opportunity. And he was very good here for many, many years. But I think that he just kind of got to a point where he just needs a change of scenery, and he needs to find a new place where he can go and be able to find success. So you wish him all the best. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm very curious to see exactly where they'll go with the spot. And I wish I could make a list of candidates, but I'm not really familiar with the rising talents of the special teams world. But yeah, I'm very curious to see how this goes. But you talked about the offensive coordinator potentials. I feel like we need to touch the stove on this to feel the heat of where the conversation's going. Kubiak is the favorite, Gary Kubiak, former Broncos head coach, Texans head coach, former Broncos offensive coordinator. He's been a part of 4 Super Bowl winning teams, a very smart mind, a guy who a lot of people feel is one of the better offensive coordinator candidates out right now. A guy that runs the Shanahan system and knows it well, has found great success with it. It feels like that's the obvious guy, but I think the only thing holding him up would be 2 things. One would be Elway, John Elway, and Elway probably trying to convince him to stay in Denver to be the offensive coordinator for whoever coach and staff they have come in after they've let go of Vance Joseph. Or I think what could be even more likely is the Falcons wanting to go with a guy that they are familiar with. And I think that's what may give Darrell Bevel, the heads up, because he and Quinn have worked together before, and Quinn of Kubiak have not. So I think that if they want to go with a guy who they really feel like, well, you know, they can have a rapport with, I think Bevel may be more likely. But I think if you're just going for accomplishment, that there's no question that Gary Kubiak is the better guy. This is who I want them to hire. I'm really pulling for this. I feel like it's the best move for the team. I think he and Ryan will hit it off pretty fast. I think he is a very veteran coach, very seasoned, and won't have any issue transitioning into making Ryan a even better quarterback than he is now. But at the same time, you can't really put a whole lot of stock into saying it's a done deal or anything, obviously, because he does have those strong ties to the Broncos organization, where he still works in the front office. And, you know, if Elway wants to get this team back on track, he knows the best offensive coordinator is going to be the guy in the building. So I'm kind of skeptical that this will end up happening, but Ian Rappaport has been very adamant to say that he is a candidate and is a guy that they're going to consider. So I will hope that's where it goes. And, you know, Daryl Bevel, obviously, was in Seattle. He made a very bad mistake in the Super Bowl that cost Seattle maybe a ring if that play would have worked. But at the same time, he also was the offensive coordinator that won them a Super Bowl and kind of helped couple with Dan Quinn in 2013 to help get them a ring. So I don't know. I feel like he's a very accomplished coordinator himself. He's found a lot of success working with good quarterbacks like Ryan. I think he would be a good hire and has that working relationship with Quinn. But I think right now a big thing we have to look at is, you know, trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do with that spot.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'll make a quick reason, like I guess a pro and a con for each one and why I think it could or couldn't happen. So first with Kubiak, and I'd like to get your opinion on it too. With Kubiak, you already said, okay, the con is the reason why it might not happen and probably won't is because of Elway. Okay, I think the pro is he's such a veteran in calling offenses. It might be too tempting for him. I mean, okay, you can stay in Denver where Case Keenum's your quarterback. Phillip Lindsay's good, but he's a rookie, so an undrafted rookie. You know, we don't know much, and he got injured. We don't know much about what he'll do in year two. Emmanuel Sanders got injured. Like, there's not a whole lot on that offense to be excited about. They lost their, like, I think the one and two tight ends on their team, too. But, hey, Kubiak, look over at the Falcons. We got a legendary wide receiver, Julio Jones. We have the greatest quarterback in Falcons history, Matt Ryan. Devontae Freeman, who should be back healthy. You know, you got to think that might be pretty tempting. A Pro Bowl caliber center and Alex Mack, you know, I think he could have more fun with it. It's almost like, you know, your friend saying, hey, come, no offense to people who have like a Toyota Camry or something, but it's like, hey, you want to come drive the Toyota Camry or you want to go drive the Ferrari? Like, it might be pretty tempting to him. With Cutter, I think it'll be, how much input does Matt Ryan have? Because I think he enjoyed having Cutter. I don't know that specifically, but I'm just saying the fact that he's even mentioned as a favorite, you know, there's been multiple sources or whatever online saying that Cutter's a favorite and one saying that Kubiak's like a favorite of, seems like a favorite of the consensus, I guess. But it seems like Cutter is like, will Matt Ryan will want him there. The away from it, he's been there before. Maybe they don't want him back. I don't know. You'd have to ask like Arthur Blank or something. So I mean, what's your opinion on that? Because I mean, like with Bevel, I think he's, to me, if I was betting, and I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I would say it's probably Bevel because it seems like Dan Quinn loves to get people he's familiar with, people in that Pete Carroll bubble, I guess you could say. They're like, you know, I don't know how friendly they are with each other, but they're familiar with each other. And it seems like the more likely, and he's also been a different source saying he's the favorite for the job. So, you know, it sounds like Cutter and Bevel are both favorites for the job while everyone's hoping it's Kubiak. But the reason I think it might not be Bevel is maybe he'll get a job somewhere else. You know, or maybe they're just touching base, but they did say he was there for training camp. So, you know, I feel like he's probably the lead dog between the three, but what do you think?
I'm curious exactly what they want to do. And I think that familiarity is going to be a huge thing because I feel like they are very, very aware. And I bet Matt Ryan has been very adamant to say, look, if we're going to get rid of Sark, that's fine, but you've got to bring in a guy that I can work with. Which I think prevents them from going out and getting like, you know, I don't know, like one of these like younger hot offensive coordinators that kind of get thrown around. It's like, I'm sure they do a good job, but Matt Ryan's like, oh my goodness, we're going to have to learn an entire new offense. And it's like, that might work. It might not work. I mean, am I really going to have to do all this all over again? I'm comfortable with where I am. You've seen the numbers I'm putting up in the scheme. Why can't we just keep what we've got and just find somebody who's better able to utilize it? And I feel like, you know, the guy that is best able to do that would probably be Kubiak. But at the same time, it's just like, can you get Kubiak here? Or will Quinn want to work with Kubiak as opposed to someone that he already knows? And or maybe better feels will be the good in the scheme. But even though I think Kubiak's the clear advantage guy to really come in and be able to run that scheme. And I imagine that if they can do that, they keep Matt Schaub for another year, who can help him transition into working with Kubiak. I feel like they've worked together a lot in Houston. So it's like, you feel like that's just such a perfect fit. But at the same time, perfection usually doesn't settle in with any NFL team. It's just hard to get all of the things that you want to happen to just line up magically. So I feel like right now there is a very tough conversation for the team to have about, you know, what they're going to do here. And I imagine we'll have a couple of other candidates that come open. I don't exactly know who they'll be, but, you know, I think you'll have other guys that will be interested in this job, think that they're going to want to take their time to interview the right person. But I think D-Led, you know, who would know, said that, hey, this search may go kind of fast. Maybe they want to get this thing settled now and go ahead and get started for 19 and get him in the building and talk about, break down the film that happened this year. And, you know, at the same time, if they hire a guy like a Cutter or, you know, a Bevel, they may have other guys on the positional side that they want to bring in. You know, you'll have new coaches hired and new guys like, oh, this is a huge decision. And we know three candidates right now between Kubiak, Bevel, and Dirk Cutter. And again, don't look past Cutter, because he has worked with Ryan for three seasons. And I could see very easily Ryan saying, bring back Dirk. Me and Dirk worked really well together, and I did well under him. And I know that even though we might have to change the scheme around a little bit, I know that scheme. So I'm not going to have to relearn it or anything. And I can take what I've learned in the Shanahan offense and put that into that too, because I'm a better quarterback than when we last ran it. So they almost went to a Super Bowl with Cutter as the offensive coordinator, lest we soon forget, in 2012. You know, they were a collapse away, unfortunately, from going to play the Ravens. So I think that all of these guys would bring good things to the table. I think Atlanta will get the guy that they need for this job. You know, I feel like in our heads we have a vision of what we want, but I think you just have to kind of trust the team to make the decision that they think is best for them. And at the same time, they didn't do that in 2017 with Sark. I don't think that they made the best hire then. I know it was late in the coaching cycle, but at the same time, it's like, I feel like you could have gotten someone better or could have maybe kept someone from Shanahan's staff. It's a difficult thing to really really look back on, but at the same time, they know they've got to find the right guy. This coaching staff is dependent, and this era of Falcons football is dependent on this hire going well. This is a major, major decision. And again, I think that it's very, you know, fine to want to get this done quickly, but I hope that they take their time enough and get enough interviews in and don't just hire their first idea, because I feel like they need to have those ideas challenged and really get a good, you know, group of folks in to do the interviewing. So we'll see how it goes. We might know by the next time we do a podcast who the offensive coordinator is, and we talk about that, of course. But right now, Kubiak, Cutter, and Bevel are the three guys to keep your eye on. All would be available for the position if it came to them and they were able to accept it. So, you know, and we'll follow the special teams search as well. And again, I imagine they'll probably promote someone on defense or kind of put a higher leadership position in there to kind of help kind of be a steward to help Dan Quinn, or kind of be like a co-defensive coordinator in terms of just, you know, helping with some of the other duties there. I don't know who that would be. I'd say watch Jeff Ulbrich. I think that's a guy who they really value.
Yeah.
I can see them promoting him just enough. But at the same time, Raheem Morris has experience on defense. He's an assistant head coach. Maybe that they will put him back in more of a defensive role. I'm not sure. But they've got a lot of good guys in-house that could help Quinn kind of lead that effort. So we'll see how it goes. I'm excited to see where they go with these moves. I have my ideas of what I think they need to do, but maybe they have different ones, and I'm willing to see what those are. So I think that gets us. That's the conversation that's going around the old Falcons campfire right now, you know, trying to figure out what this coordinator change is going to look like, and it's a big one. So, you know, follow the Falcoholic to see where we're going with it. We got a coaching tracker, lots of up-to-the-minute stories about what the big news is and just, you know, where that's all going. So be sure to, you know, keep your ear to the ground and follow along. But I think that will wrap us up for this episode of the Falcoholics post-game podcast. We appreciate you listening to a bit of a longer edition, since we've got a lot to talk about. And, you know, Evan, please tell everybody where they can find you and what you're working on.
Appreciate you having me on again. It's been a great season, and we'll see what the off season brings. By the time you're listening to this, you might actually know who the offensive coordinator is. I don't know, but you can find me on Twitter at Evan Birchfield, and also I run the Falcoholics Instagram account, and you can follow that at the it's just the Falcoholic between the and the Falcoholics underscore. That's pretty much it.
Well, Evan, thank you so much for coming on. I always enjoy having you on the show. And you can follow me on Twitter at Corey Woodruff 47. Follow all of my terrible takes over at The Falcoholic. And be sure to follow along with all the good content we have at this time of year. We've got the coaching search, where I think we did a great job of getting all that out today. And we've got a lot of great content you can go check out there. And throughout the week, you know, we'll have what you need. And just make sure you check in with everything we've got going with all of our audio and written content. Proud to be able to recommend everything and anything that the Falcoholic has to offer. And be sure to connect with us all on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So be sure to link with us on all those big platforms and let us know what you think. And of course, thank you so much for following along this season. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. And we've talked about the games that were and tried to break down exactly what happened and what we could talk about. And, you know, we'll be with you throughout the year. We'll have more kind of on the future of where the podcast will go in the off season soon. But be sure to check with us next week. We'll do a season recap to kind of close out this season of the Falcoholics post game podcast, the postseason podcast, as you could say. Except we're not talking about that postseason. It's both in a different vernacular, sadly. But you know, we'll talk about the season that was, try to talk about things that the team needs to fix for the future and things that could be, you know, just chalked up to just rotten luck and injury. So we'll have that conversation for you soon. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Corey Woodruff. Hope you have a wonderful new year with all your family and friends and fellow Falcons fans. And thank you for tuning in with us and reading our stories and following along with us and conversing with us. We always appreciate it, all the engagement. So thank you so much. Your readership and listenership is a credit to us, and we will look forward to carrying that over with us into the new year. So thank you so much. And of course, bye bye.
Hey, I'm Anil Dash, and I'm the host of a new show called Function from the Vox Media Podcast Network and Glitch. This season, we're talking with experts about why our voting machines are so bad and how that might hurt our elections. We'll also talk with an animator to find out how popular dances from the real world end up in video games. And we're going to tackle the biggest question in tech: why do so many celebrities use screenshots from that Apple Notes app to make their public apologies when they screw up? You can find new episodes of Function every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And thanks to Microsoft Azure for sponsoring Function.